Okay, good morning, everyone. So it's Parshat Tetzaveh. I will share a screen in a minute, but Parshat Tetzaveh is essentially four topics. So the first topic, the opening of the Parsha, is to do with the lighting of the menorah, and the command was given to Moshe Rabbeinu to that they should bring oil to him, olives, and they'll crush them and they'll produce oil. The second is the Bigdei Kohuna, the priestly garments. The third part of the regular Kohen and the Kohen Gadol. The third part is inaugurating the Mishkan, how it has to all be inaugurated, how the Kohanim had to be trained to do the service, and the various sacrifices, or some of the sacrifices that were going to be brought there. And finally, at the end of the parasha, we have the Mizbeach HaKetoris, which is the inner altar, the small altar, the small Mizbeach, the golden one, which was, we had all the other vessels of the Mishkan last week, but this week we have there's two that weren't there, but the one we have this week is the small altar, the one that they brought incense on, the Ketoris, and that's in this week's parasha also. That's the four things in this parasha. So what I want to do today is just do some short things about the garments of the Kohanim, and then I'm going to share with you a whole idea on the first part of the parasha, and which develops the theme, which runs through the whole parasha together. I'll just give me 1 second. Okay, so let me just share the screen here. There we are. Okay. I'll just make it a drop bigger so everyone can see. Okay. So, the first part of Parashat Tetzaveh works like this. No, sorry, it's actually not the first part. It's the second part, but I'm going to do it first. So it's number one on your handout. So the Torah says the following. Va'ato hakrev eilecha. Hashem speaks to Moshe Rabbeinu and says, you should bring close to you es Aaron, achicha Aaron, your brother, es bonov itoy, and his sons, mitoich b'nei Yisrael, from the Jewish people, l'chahanoi li, to be kohanim for me. Who are the people? Aaron, is Aaron. There were five people. Nadav and Aviv, which were Aaron's first two sons, Elazar and Isamar, the second two sons, b'nei Aaron, the sons of Aaron. As we know, later on, Nadav and Aviv were killed by Hashem, and it was only Aaron, Elazar, and Isamar, and then later on we have Pinchas, who was Elazar's son, who became a Kohen later. Then he says, Vasisa Bigdei Kodesh la'Aaron Achicha, you should make Bigdei Kodesh, you should make a priestly garments for Aaron, your brother, L'Chovod L'Sifaros, which will be for glory, for beauty, very complex clothing, especially for the Kohen Gadol. Then he says, you should speak to those that are smart in their heart. In other words, heart-wise. Who I have filled with the spirit of wisdom. They should make the garments for Aaron. To sanctify him. To make him a kohen for me. These are the garments you should make. Choshen, there was a breastplate. An apron, a me'il, a long coat, uksoinus tashbeitz, sort of a tunic, a shirt, mitznefes v'avneit, a hat and a turban and a belt. There's one missing here, which was the like the pants. Also, bigdei kodesh la'aron achicha, you shall make holy garments for Aaron, your brother, levona, for his children, chanani. And v'heim yichus azov, they should take these wise people should take the gold, the tcheles, the blue wool, the sagoman, the purple wool, last shani, the red wool, the sashesh, the linen. They should make very elaborate threads out of them, including threads of gold, as Rashi explains, and with that they'll make these garments. Now, in other words, there were four garments for a regular kohen, eight garments which were made just plain white linen, and the other ones were eight, an additional four, which were very elaborate garments that were for the kohen gadol, and that was Aaron HaKohen. Okay, now, we find, particularly with the Kohen Gadol, the Gemara tells us that each beged, each garment, was there to atone for something, right? Each garment was there to atone for a different sin. In other words, they weren't just garments that they were wearing. Now, that the fact that they wore garments in itself was very significant. The Chinuch explains, we've done this before, that it was there to remind them to be focused and remind them of the holiness of their task. That's the famous Sefer HaChinuch where he says that a person follows the actions. A person's heart follows the action. A person's influenced by the action. And therefore the heaviness of the garments and the way they wore them and so on would create an awareness and a consciousness of where they were. That was one thing. But particularly with the Kohen Gadol, every garment that he wore represented an atonement for a different sin that was existed among the Jewish people. I'll just run through them quickly. So the kesoinus, the shirt, that atoned for murder. Now, when we say atoned for murder, meaning it brought kapara, it brought atonement for the sin of manslaughter or murder, particularly when it wasn't able to be prosecuted in a beis din, which can happen if there's no witnesses, whatever the case is. And why was the shirt chosen to be an atonement for that? Because that was similar to the shirt that the brothers, the ksoinus that the brothers of Yosef had dipped into the blood, and they were trying to hide the murder, or they were trying to hide what they had done to Yosef by saying that he'd been murdered by an animal and so on. So that's why that was the garment that would atone for murder. The michnasayim, the breeches, the pants were atoned for immorality. That's that part of the body, of course. The mitznefes, the turban, would atone for arrogance because it's on top of the head. The avnet, the belt. Now we'll talk about a belt, just to, so you should know, the belt was not a small belt. The belt was a very, very long belt made out of 32 amos, which is about 16 meters. And it went round and round and round. It was very heavy around the heart, actually. That atoned for improper thoughts of the heart. In other words, thoughts that we conceal, but they're inappropriate. The choshen, which was on the heart, was about the perversion of justice. If anything went wrong in din, that was the choshen. The ephod, the apron, was an atonement for the sin of idolatry, because the idolatrous priest, the pagan priest, would always wear these very, very fancy aprons. So therefore, the apron of the Kohen Gadol was an atonement for that. The me'il, this is not clear exactly the connection here, but the me'il, the long cloak, was for Lashon Hara, spoken in public. Maybe it's got to do with the bells that were at the bottom making noise. I'm not sure exactly what the connection is there. And the tzitz, the head plate that was worn by the Kohen Gadol, on his forehead would atone for brazenness, chutzpah. Because the way the Gemara always associates chutzpah with the forehead. In fact, chutzpah in a Gemara is always called azus metzach, the brazenness of the forehead. I guess it's putting themselves forward without any boundaries or whatever the case is. Okay. So the Ben Ish Chai points out a very interesting thing. He says, this whole idea of atonement, he says, this explains something in the Pasuk. If you ever look again at number one, you'll see that look at the last verse in number one. Not the last, the second to last, sorry. It says, V'eila ha-begodim, these are the clothes they should make, and it goes and lists them. And then at the end of the pasuk it says, V'asu b'gdei kodesh, you should make holy garments, l'aron achicho levon avchanani, which is a repetition. It just says, these are the garments you should make, and then it says, they should make holy garments for Aaron and your brother, which is a repetition, right? It could just could have said, these are the garments you should make and list them without having that last part of the pasuk. And he asked a few other questions, but essentially it's like this. The Ben Ish Chai answered the following. He said, every one of these garments, because we know that each one atoned for a different sin, as we just said, each one of these garments was two garments. It was a physical garment and a spiritual garment, right? So the physical garment has to be done in a certain elaborate way, in a certain specific way. And the spiritual garment has to be created and designed also by people who know how to do that, by creating a spiritual garment, a spiritual form of sorts, right? And that's people, and he says that's the difference between these two garments. Garments themselves, the physical garments, are referred to as begodim, just garments, right? Whereas the form, the spiritual garments that were made are called bigdei kodesh. Now, not everyone knew how to do that. The people who were designing the garments were specially chosen by Hashem. They were chachmei lev. They were tzaddikim. They weren't just good designers. They were actually great people. And they had the ability to be able to do both, to attach a spiritual garment connected to the physical garment, each garment that they made, they would attach the two things together. And that explains the pasuk. It says, "Ve'ele habagadim." These are the clothes that's referring to the physical clothes. They should make and list them. At the end, it says, but you shouldn't forget, also bigdei kodesh. They also have to make the holy garments, which are these special spiritual garments. Says in the end of the pasuk, which will also be for the kohanim, and that's a garment, a holy garment. Each one holy garment per one physical garment. Yeah. Okay. So that's just one idea about the bigdei kodesh. Now, I'll just share with you one thing on one particular garment. It goes like this. One of the garments was this very elaborate choshen, the breastplate that he would have on his knees, right? That was made. It was made by cloth, and the cloth that had golden settings. And each golden setting, there was a stone, a precious stone. Each one had the name of one of the tribes written on it, all the letters of the aleph bays, and so on and so forth, right? So you have a look. It says like this. Then, in number two, it says, "When a sata as choshen hamishpat." You should put this, it was called the Choshen HaMishpat. You should put into it Esa Urim V'Esa Tumim. The Urim V'Tumim, which we'll explain in a minute. V'Hoyu Alev Aaron V'Voy Lefnei Hashem. And that will be on the heart of Aaron when he comes before God. V'Nasa Aaron Es Mishpat V'Nei Yisrael Liboy. He will carry the judgment of the Jewish people on his heart, because the Choshen is an atonement for justice. Lefnei Hashem Tumim before Hashem constantly. What's the Urim V'Tumim? So this garment, which was very elaborate, it was a piece of, the base of it was a piece of material made by these very fancy threads, folded into two, right? It was an amma by an amma, folded into two, and then it became smaller, right? And they would place in the middle, in that fold, they placed a special thing called the Urim V'Tumim, which had the name of Hashem or something, right? And that gave this breastplate special powers. And this actually did not happened in the second temple. It only happened in the first, in the Mishkan and in the first temple, or all the Mishkans until the first temple, the first Pesach, and that's it. Then that thing was missing. They still had the garment in the second temple, but didn't have that special insert, right? What was that insert for? That insert was, the word Urim actually means instruction, and Tumim means complete. The Urim and Tumim meant that the Kohen had, when there was a very, very big question that was didn't have an obvious answer of what the people have to do and what they have to, wars they would fight, or other sort of questions, the Kohen Gadol would ask Hashem, and the answer would shine up on the breastplate, the letters that were in the Aleph Beis, all the letters of the Aleph Beis that were there mixed up in the different tribes, it would light up the answer. So the Ramban explains that why it's called Urim and Tumim. So he says like this, he says, because there were two things that used to happen. One is that the letters would shine up, right? They would illuminate. That's the Urim. The Tumim was, there was a second miracle, that's the Kohen Gadol would have the insight to be able to decode these letters, because sometimes they were all jumbled up and wasn't so obvious what the answer is, right? So that's what the Ramban explains. The Vilna Gaon says, this explains a story that happened in Tanakh, a very famous story that we read on Rosh Hashanah, the story of Chana. Chana, the mother of Shmuel Hanavi, right, came to the, she was childless, as we know, and she came to the Mishkan. This was Mishkan Shiloh, the Mishkan that stood in Shiloh. Mishkan Shiloh, incidentally, stood for 369 years. And she came towards the end. The last Kohen Gadol of Shiloh was Eli, right? Eli was the Kohen Gadol, and he was there when Chana came to pray for children. We all know the story that Chana prayed for children. She prayed quietly. She davened quietly. She was crying. And Eli suspected her of being drunk. Right? He challenged her afterwards. He says, why are you inebriated? And why are you standing like this in front of Hashem? And she said, no, I'm not. I'm not full of wine. I'm not shikr. I'm a bitter woman crying out my heart to Hashem for children. Right? So the Ramban says that what happened was as follows. The Vilna Gaon says what happened was as follows. Famous Vilna Gaon says, Eli wasn't actually sure, right? So he asked a question, hoping to get the answer from the Choshen. Yeah? And letters illuminated. So he had the Urim. The problem with Eli was He was ready towards the end of the Mishkan, it looks like, and he wasn't on such an unbelievable level. He didn't have the Tumim. So what are the letters that showed up? Chaf, Shin, Resh, He. Right? Which could be read, well, that's what he read at least, as Shikoira. She's drunk. Which is why he reached the conclusion that he was right. Shitake is drunk, and he admonished her. She said, no, I'm not Shikoira. And that's not the answer. I'm Kashera, which means I'm kosher. Or, as Eli realized afterwards, Chofshin Reishe can also mean Kasara, that she was like Sarah. Just like Sarah, her prayers were eventually answered and she was blessed with a son, so too, this woman is also going to be blessed with a son. And that was the issue. So the issue was that he did ask the question. He was a Kohen Gadol and he had the Choshen. Problem with him was he had the Urim, he didn't have the Tumim. That's what the Vilna Gaon explains based on the Ramban, and therefore it showed up this way, and he misinterpreted it as Shikaira rather than Kashera or Kasara. Oops, that's it. Okay. That's just a little bit on the Big Day Kahuna. In previous years, we've done a lot more on the garments of the Kohanim, but I just wanted to mention a couple of things. Now, let's go to the beginning of the Parsha. And let's just read it first. And then we'll see. Okay. Oops. What am I doing? Okay. So, the beginning of the parasha starts in an interesting way. It's Hashem talking to Moshe Rabbeinu, obviously. And he says, "V'ata tetzave es b'nei Yisrael." And you will command the Jewish people. Let's read it together. It's number three. V'yikhu eilecha, and they will bring to you, they will take to you, shemen zayizoch, pure olive oil, kosis lamoi, crushed olives to produce oil for light, lamoir, or, which will then be used, lahalois neir tomid, to kindle the constant flame. Where will the flame be kindled? The oil moed in the sanctuary, in the Mishkan. Michutz laparoich is just on the other end of the curtain dividing the holy ark, the Aron Kodesh, with everything else. Alo edus, yaruch oisa aron nevona, Aron and his sons will arrange the candles there. Me'erev ad boker, from evening to morning, although it has to light from evening to morning. Lifnei Hashem, before God. Chukas oilem adereisam. Chukas oilem, which means an eternal statute for all generations, Me'es b'nei Yisroel, from the Jewish people. Yeah. Okay, so that's the first part of the parasha. Now, it's a very, very strange part of the parasha because many mefarshim have lots of questions on this. Number one, why is the emphasis on they should bring the oil to Moshe Rabbeinu? Now, every mitzvah was communicated to Moshe Rabbeinu, as we know, for him to communicate to everyone else, right? So normally it would be Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu saying, Dabar b'nei Yisrael, speak to the Jewish people, this is what they should do. Now, first of all, this is not really the place for the mitzvah of kindling the candles. The truth is, this is repeated later in Parshas Emor and in Parshas Bal Yisro. What's strange here is why it's such an emphasis on Moshe Rabbeinu. Why him? Now, v'ato tetzaves b'nei Yisrael, you should command the Jewish people, you understand, that's Moshe Rabbeinu's job. But they should bring to him the oil, why? He's going to have to do this mitzvah. Right? He's going to oversee the mitzvah like everything else, but it's not his mitzvah really. And therefore, why is it coming to him? In other words, this seems to be an incredible emphasis on Moshe Rabbeinu running the show here, right? Okay. So as a result of that question, I mean, that needs to be understood on a simple shot, but on a result of that question, we find many, many different interpretations of this pasuk, more deeper spiritual explanations of this pasuk, of it being not only referring to the menorah, but referring to a deeper light and referring to Moshe Rabbeinu connecting the Jewish people and bringing them together and so on and so forth. I'll just share with you some, then I'm going to share with you a very deep idea that's gone through the whole parasha and this from a sikh of the Rebbe. But just a couple of things first. First of all, Rashi brings already an interesting thing, and the Baal HaTurim brings it down. You see over there it says, Kosis Lamoir. You should bring the oil. Kosis, crushed, lamo'er, to bring light. So the word kosis is a remez, it's a hint to the two Bate Mikdash, the two temples which this where this mitzvah took place, which was the first place of Mikdash and the second place of Mikdash. How so? We know the first place of Mikdash stood for 410 years, the second place of Mikdash stood for 420 years. If you look at Kosis, you'll see two tofs, which is 400 each, tof Yud and tof Chof, right? So the obvious question is, that's what the Baal HaTorah says. The obvious question is, so if it's a remez, if it's a hint to where the kindling of the menorah took place, so what about the Mishkan? And what about the third Pesach Mikdash, right? So I saw one of the Mefarshim on the Baal HaTorah says the following. He says very simple. It's only talking about the temples that were destroyed because it's hinted in the word Kosis. Kosis means crushed. Crushed is a symbol of destruction. So which was crushed? Crushed was the first piece of Mikdash and the second piece of Mikdash, Tof Yud and Tof Chof, 410 and 420, right? Now, how about the third piece of Mikdash? The third piece of Mikdash was never going to be destroyed. So that's actually hinted in the next word, Lamor, light. It's going to be an eternal light. How about the Mishkan? So we know the Mishkan also wasn't destroyed. The Mishkan stood all 40 years in the desert and was dismantled and was hidden. We believe that the parts of the Mishkan are still around. Why? Because it was made by Moshe Rabbeinu. The Chazal tell us that the Moshe Nitzchim, that the work of Moshe is eternal. And that's why it's still around. So that wasn't destroyed. So therefore, Kosis is only a reference to the first and second Beis HaMikdash that were actually destroyed. Okay. The Kli Yakar, there's a long Kli Yakar now. I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but essentially what he says is, the reason that Moshe Rabbeinu is here is like this, because he asks another question. He says, it says, Lahalo is ner tomid, it was to kindle an eternal light, an eternal flame. The menorahs were not eternal, meaning they weren't burning all the time, only at night. So why are they called ner tomid? Now, it's not really a big question, because we know that something that happens every day is also called ner tomid, right? Like, for example, there was a carbon brought every day, it's also called a carbon tomid. It means it happens every day, it's consistent, right? He says, nevertheless, what's the pshat? And also, ner is only singular, one candle. The menorah was seven candles. So he says that the Neir Tomid that's talking about in the first pasuk here is actually a reference to something else. It's a reference to one of the candles known in Gemara as Neir Ma'aravi, the western candle, the one that was closest to the Shekhinah, to the divine presence in the Holy of Holies. And that was miraculously burnt the whole time. Right? And he says, why is that? Because we know that the Mishkan was divided into three parts. There was the Kodesh Kadoshim, the Holy of Holies. There was the Kodesh, where the menorah was, and then there was the outside, the Mizbech. And he says, as a sign for the Shekhinah, right? As a sign for the Shekhinah, there had to be a special miracle each one of these parts. Right? So the miracle, for example, there's a miracle in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that the Oren took up space and didn't take up space at the same time. We've talked about this before. The miracle in the second part of the Mishkan was this miracle, that there was a candle that had the same amount of oil as all the other wicks, and nevertheless, it burnt the whole time. He says, who was responsible for ensuring the miracle? That was the schus of Moshe Rabbeinu. That's why the Pasuk says, Va'ato, you, Moshe Rabbeinu, you have to command the Bnei Yisrael that there should be Shemen Zai Zach, there should be the pure olive oil, which will be used not to kindle the whole menorah, which comes later, that's what Aaron has to do, but that will be kindled the Halos Ner Tomid, the one miraculous candle, which Aaron will kindle, but the miracle will happen because of you, and that's why there's this emphasis on Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay. Another interesting idea that I saw, before we go to the main idea that I want to share, is a very interesting Zohar. Right? The Zohar says that we know we've had a number of different exiles and a number of different redemptions, right? And the Zohar says that the Geula HaAsida, the Geula through Mashiach, will come through Moshe Rabbeinu, the schus of Moshe Rabbeinu, the merit of Moshe Rabbeinu, right? And this is based on a Zohar, a bit of a sharp Zohar actually. The Zohar says like this. The Zohar asks, why is this Geulah taking so long, right? This is the longest Golus ever. Mitzrayim took, huh? Yeah. It is a good question, right? It's a question actually best left unanswered, but nevertheless. So Rabbi Yitzchak says Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta was sitting in front of Rabbi Yitzchak, and he asked him, why is it taking so long? So Rabbi Yitzchak answered, it's because of Bittul Torah. People are not learning enough Torah. So he says, why? He says, because this is what I heard from Rav Hamamnuna Sova, who was a great, one of the rabbis mentioned the Zohar, but he was a great Kabbalist as well. And he says there were three exiles that the Yidden went into Golos, and they were redeemed from those exiles, Bischus Gimel Ha'ovois, in the Schus of the three fathers. Right? Meaning, like, for example, the first one, Mitzrayim. So we know the Yidden went out of Mitzrayim. Of course, Moshe Rabbeinu talked about Mitzrayim, but it was the merit of Avraham Avinu. It was the promise that Avraham Avinu, Hashem had made Avraham Avinu, etc. But he says the fourth one will be Bischus of Moshe Rabbeinu. Therefore, they went into Golos, the Gemara says, one of them is because they forsake the learning of Torah, and they will come back in the Schus of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is Torah. Right? That's the idea. And he says like this, therefore he says, that's the Pshat. Ve'ata, this is this Pasuk. Ve'ata tetzave espina Yisrael. Now, the word tetzave can mean to command, right? But also means to connect. You know that the word mitzvah means to tzavso, to come together, in Aramaic particularly, right? So Hashem is saying, ve'ata, you will connect to the Jewish people. When will you connect to the Jewish people? In the redemption to come, the redemption through Mashiach, right? However, when will that happen? The yikhu eilecha shemen zayizoch, when they bring to you pure olive oil. What's that a reference to? The study of Torah. And pure, because we know the Torah is compared to oil. It's a wisdom which is detached. It doesn't dilute from anything. It always remains pure. And it's hidden. And this is a reference particularly to the hidden part of Torah and so on and so forth. But it has to be pure, which means it has to be proper learning Torah, which is learned for the mitzvah. And it has to be kosis, has to be crushed. What's that a reference to? That's a reference to what the Gemara says, that to really achieve the learning of Torah, you have to toil, you have to work hard, you have to kill yourself with Torah, basically. That's the idea of crush. So, when the Yidden, the Yichu Eilecha Shemen Zayizoch, when they'll bring to you pure olive oil, learning Torah for its sake, learning Torah for its mitzvah, Kosis Lamor will be crushed and will produce the appropriate light, then it will be V'ato Tetzaves B'nei Yisrael, you will command the Jewish people. Okay. Yeah, that's another pshat in this pasuk. Okay, now what I want to share with you now is based on a talk that the Rebbe once gave, a very long talk about this pasuk and about this parsha. So we know the famous Balaturim. Balaturim says it's actually rooted in a Zohar as well, and it's brought to other places. But the Balaturim is famously quotes this, and he says that from when the time that Moshe Rabbeinu was born, right, which is Parshas Shmos, until the book of Dvarim, Moshe Rabbeinu's name is mentioned in every single parsha except for this one, right? Okay, actually, I don't need to. We can actually start the share now. Oops, there we are. Okay. So, Moshe Rabbeinu's name is mentioned in every single parsha except for this one. Why? So, the famous idea, the famous thing on the surface is like this. Baal Turim says, because next week's parasha, we have the sin of the golden calf, where Hashem became incredibly angry with the Jewish people for doing such a grave sin of avodah zarah, of idol worship. And he told Moshe Rabbeinu, who was still on the mountain at that point, I'm going to wipe out the nation, and I'll make a nation from you. Moshe Rabbeinu went out he went all out for the Jewish people. And he said, I'm trying to find exactly. He says, like he says, let's see, why is the, I'm trying to get the exact, that's later on, I think. Yeah. So Moshe Rabbeinu said to Hashem like this, that you need to atone for the sin, right? You need to, if you don't, v'im ayin, if you won't give atonement, if you won't forgive for the sin, mecheni no mesifrcha asher kasafta, erase me from the book that you've written. You say, erase me from the book, right? And Hashem said, I'm not going to do that, because I'll blame the person who actually did that avera. But at the end, Hashem did forgive the Jewish people, right? However, there's a klal, there's a rule, it's brought down in Gemara, that kila las chacham afilu al tnai bo. If a chacham, if a talmud chacham, if a great tzaddik, curses himself or says something, even if it's conditional, it has an effect even if the condition wasn't fulfilled. And therefore, in fact, Moshe Rabbeinu's threat, so to speak, was fulfilled. It was fulfilled in this week's parasha. We have one parasha in the Torah. We're talking about the exception of the book of Bereishis, because Moshe Rabbeinu hadn't been born yet. And of course, that exception is the book of Dvarim, because the book of Dvarim is, it just says, these are the words that Moshe Rabbeinu spoke, and the whole Dvarim is his speech, so it doesn't mention his name again, except at the end when he passes away, right? The last parasha, the first parasha, but the next Dvarim is just his speech, so there's no mention of his name. Other than that, Shmois, Vayikra, Bamidbar, every parasha has Moshe Rabbeinu's name, except for this one, because that was a fulfillment of that threat. Incidentally, I saw one of the first from Balaturim says the name of Reb Shol Katzen Ellenbogen of Vilna. He says that nevertheless, Moshe Rabbeinu's name is certainly hinted in this week's parasha. Why? He says a beautiful thing, because this week's parasha has 101 psukim, right? If you take the word Moshe, Mem Shin Hei, there's always what we call revealed letters and hidden letters. How do you spell mem? Mem, mem, right? So this hidden letter is mem. Shin is shin yud nun, so there's yud and nun. And hey, there's different ways to spell it, but it can be spelled hey aleph. So aleph. So if you take mem, which is the hidden letter of the first mem, yud nun, which is the hidden letters of shin, and aleph, which is the hidden letters of hey, and you put them together, the gematria is 101, which is 101 psukim of parashat tzaveh, and therefore, though Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned, but it's hinted in the fact that there's 101 psukim. Okay. Now, the famous problem with this is, so why this parsha? Why this parsha? So one answer that's given is because this parsha always comes around. No, because it's actually very strange that this parsha, right? Because Hashem takes his name out of parsha's tetzaveh, which we understand, but actually the Egel Azov hasn't happened yet. It's next week's parsha, right? So maybe it should be, if Hashem says, okay, I'll take you out of one parasha, it should be the next parasha after Kisisa. Why this parasha? One reason is, as explained in some Mefarshim, that it's got to do with the fact that parasha's Tetzaveh has always got to do with Zayin Adar, the 7th of Adar, which is today, by the way. 7th of Adar is always read around either Shabbos before, Shabbos afterwards. It's always around Zayin Adar. Zayin Adar, of course, is the birthday and the yahrzeit of Moshe Rabbein. Right? So that's a significant day. It's a very special day. Questionable about where you celebrate Zayin Adar, the first Adar, when there's two Adars, the first Adar and the second Adar. So most Paskim generally, in terms of the yahrzeit part of it, there's a whole question, by the way, if someone is born in a year where there's not two Adars, then when is the birthday and when is a yahrzeit if there's two Adars, right? So the standard practice is that the yahrzeit you go the first Adar, the birthday you go the second Adar. Okay. There's a machloek, there's a dispute among the Paskim, but that's the standard practice. Therefore, the yahrzeit of Moshe Rabbeinu will be today. And that's why it's got to do with the fact that he passed away, so therefore his name is not in Parashat Tetzaveh. Okay. But the fact that it is Parashat Tetzaveh, Bahashgacha Pratis, must mean that it's got a connection to Parashat Tetzaveh. We need to understand why. And when we say it's got a connection to Parashat Tetzaveh, it's not just the first part of Parashat Tetzaveh, it's everything, right? It's got to do with the oil, the beginning. It's got to do with the godim of the Kohanim's garments, and it's got to do with the Mizbech. And the inauguration of the Mishkan, also the Mizbech HaKatoris, the incense offering. So what's going on? How's this all connected? To understand that, we also need to understand something else, right? That when we say that Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned in the parasha, it's actually a strange thing to say. Although Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned, but in a way, because of that, he's mentioned more in this parasha. Why? How does the parasha even start? Ve'ata tetzaveh, you will command. And normally it doesn't say like that. Normally it says, Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu saying, speak to the Bnei Yisrael. So this parasha doesn't have Moshe Rabbeinu's name. So every time it talks about Moshe Rabbeinu, and what Moshe Rabbeinu is supposed to be doing, it's Hashem speaking to Moshe Rabbeinu saying, ve'ata, and you will do this. So the question is like this, and this is the Rebbe's observation. What represents Moshe in a deeper way? His name or the word Va'ata? Right? The word Ata. As the Kli Yokra I mentioned before actually mentions this, Kli Yokra says the word Ata means your essence, right? So you know, like this, a name of a person is actually more of a superficial. We do learn in Kabbalah that a name is very deep and it's connected to the essence of the person, and sometimes it can be related to the real, you know, essential energy of the person. That's why if someone faints, there's a minhag to call his Hebrew name and so on. But all true. But at the end of the day, a name is not necessary for a person if he's within themselves. A name is something superficial, only how a person relates to the outside world. That's why a person needs a name. Right? So a name is a manifestation of the person. It's not the person themselves. Yeah? But when you say Ato, you, you means the real you. Yeah? So what does that mean? Sorry? Right. So it means the Moshe. So we say the Moshe Rabbeinu kind of sounds like it was almost punished. He said, take me out of your book. So Hashem takes him out of Parashas Tetzaveh and leaves him there much more, much deeper. Right? Okay. So what does it all mean? To understand this, we have to understand what Moshe Rabbeinu was talking about. What did he do? Moshe Rabbeinu went out on a limb. He went out completely for the Bnei Yisrael, right? So much so that he told Hashem, if you don't atone for the Egel Azov, erase me from the Torah. So there's a few things we have to understand here. First of all, what's the connection? Like, what's the threat? What do you mean erase me from the Torah? How's that going to help? Right? What does Rabbeinu mean? He's saying, if you don't forgive the Jewish people for the sin of idolatry, which is a very serious sin, take me out of the Chumash. And that will help? I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu was a great tzaddik. He was Moshe Rabbeinu. He wasn't just throwing a tantrum. Right? He was saying something. Right? That's number one. Secondly, we have to understand, how could Moshe Rabbeinu do that? Moshe Rabbeinu is Torah. He's called Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe our teacher. Moshe Kibbul Torah Misina. Moshe is synonymous with Torah. That's so highlighted in the thing we said before, that we say the Geulah HaSidah, the final redemption will come because of Moshe Rabbeinu. What? How do we make it happen? Therefore, we're going to do something that's connected to Moshe Rabbeinu, which is learn Torah, right? Moshe Rabbeinu is Torah. So how can Moshe Rabbeinu say that for a couple of over there avodah zarah, for a couple of idol worshippers, which clearly are very serious, we're not talking about people that did something light, we're talking about people that were over, they transgressed the avera of idol worship, right? So he's saying, he's begging Hashem, he's demanding from Hashem, so to speak, that he has to forgive them. And he says, if not, take me out of the Torah. Disconnect me from the Torah. How can Moshe Rabbeinu, who is Torah, do that? So the explanation of this is as following. It's connected to something we've spoken about before, and that is like this. Two things. First of all, we have to understand the relationship between Moshe Rabbeinu and the Jewish people. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu in the Zohar is referred to as Raya Mehemna, a faithful shepherd, meaning he was the Nasi, he was the leader of the Jewish people. There's a Rashi somewhere in Chumash where Rashi says, Hanosi hu akol, the leader is everyone, meaning the Yidden are Moshe, and Moshe is the Jewish people. Rashi says later in Chumash where there's a contradiction. It says one place that Moshe Rabbeinu, when they were coming, they were traveling in the desert. It's a beautiful Rashi, right? He says that, Parashat Chukas, it says that Moshe Rabbeinu sent messengers to Edom to see if they can get passageway through the city of Edom. That's one place. Another place in Tanakh it says that the Jewish people sent messengers. So Rashi says, which one was it? Was it Moshe? Was it the Jewish people? Rashi says, makes no difference. Moshe is the Jewish people. Is Moshe the same thing? Right? Therefore, whatever happens to the Jewish people happens to Moshe Rabbeinu. We know this, that when even though Moshe Rabbeinu was on the mountain, it had absolutely nothing to do with serving the golden calf. Nevertheless, Hashem said, Lech Rei, go down the mountain and see what's happening. And the Chazal tell us it wasn't just about going down the mountain. It was Lech Rei, Hashem was saying, go down. In other words, experience a Yerida. I'm demoting you, so to speak. You're gonna be affected by this spiritually because the Jewish people said with Egel Azov, and even though you're here and completely not connected, but nevertheless, you are connected because you and the Jewish people are one. Now, when we say that the Moshe Rabbeinu is completely one with the Jewish people, that's very much like we say that the Jewish people are connected to Hashem. What do I mean by that? So we have the famous idea that goes like this, that it's a medrash, it's based on, the Rebbe doesn't go into such detail here, but he alludes to this, or he references at least. There's a famous medrash that the Jewish people and the Torah precede the world. We've talked about this before, right? because they both transcend the world, they both come before creation. It says the Medrash, Mi Kodam Lami. So who is higher? Who's higher than who? In other words, which one comes first, the Torah or the Jewish people? So it says the Medrash, that it says in the Torah, Dabir El B'nai Yisrael, speak to the Jewish people, right? Which means the Torah is saying, speak to the Jewish people, which means the Jewish people come before the Torah. Whatever that means, right? What it does mean is follow is the following, that there's something, obviously our whole essence and our whole connection through to Hashem is revealed through Torah. That is completely true. That's why no one should ever make the mistake that we don't need Torah, chas v'shalom. Our whole connection is revealed through Torah. In fact, the very fact that we are higher than Torah teaches us that. We would know without Torah, right? So obviously Torah is absolutely essential to the way we relate to Hashem. But at the end of the day, there's a connection, there's a bond that a Jew has to Hashem that is even deeper than the Torah, right? And the same thing, we know the concept of tzaddikim doimim l'boirim. Tzaddikim are compared to Hashem. Tzaddikim go in the same way that Hashem does. So when we say that Moshe Rabbeinu is inseparably bound up with every Yid, the Yidden are him and he is the Yid, it's one deep connection that Moshe Rabbeinu has that even goes beyond the connection that Moshe Rabbeinu has with Torah. Meaning, the connection between Moshe Rabbeinu and Torah is very, very deep, extremely deep, but it doesn't go to the absolute essence of Moshe Rabbeinu. The essence of Moshe Rabbeinu is the connection he has to the Yidden. Which is why Moshe Rabbeinu, on a simple surface, but then it goes even deeper, Moshe Rabbeinu will forego his connection to the Torah here in order to save a Yid. Number one. Number two, this connection that Moshe Rabbeinu has to every Jew, which on a deep level is even deeper than Torah, is to every Jew, no matter what the Jew's connection to Torah is. The very fact that it's a Jew, Moshe Rabbeinu has a connection to, right? Why? Because it goes to the very deep connection that a Jew has with Hashem, which is non-conditional on Torah. Now, obviously, again, when you reveal that connection, then you've got to bring it back to Torah, because it has to be revealed and nurtured through Torah. But it exists, right? So with that concept, we can understand everything. Moshe Rabbeinu comes to Hashem and says like this. The Yidden have done something terrible. Not all the Yidden, some of the Yidden. We find later that actually, although all the Yidden was held somewhat responsible, but if you want to talk about the real problem of the Egel Azov, the actual act of idol worship, which is considered a cardinal sin and so on and so forth, there was 3,000 people, right? The Erev Rab, but others also, but it was only a handful of people, right? Comes along Moshe Rabbeinu and says, listen, I can't leave any Yid behind. Me and the Yidden, it has to be every Jew. So you have to forgive them. Now, what do you mean you have to forgive them? Find a way to forgive them. Find a way to give atonement to them. If you can't, what does that mean you can't? If Torah won't allow, if the teachings of the Torah won't be able to tolerate the sin of idolatry, which is understandable, it goes against the very essence of what Torah is. In other words, if we're not able to do this through the Torah way, take me out of the Torah. Let's go deeper than Torah. Take my name out of the Torah. Because my connection to Torah, this is where the name comes into it. My connection to Torah, says Moshe Rabbeinu, is very deep, but at the end of the day, it's just my name. It's not my absolute essence. It's for Atta, exactly. It's who I am. So the im ayin, if you can't find the connection to the Torah, if you can't find a way within the context of Torah to forgive and atone for the Jewish people, mecheni no mesifra, it's not a threat. It's a pathway to tshuva. Mecheni no, take my name out of the Torah so we can go deeper than the Torah. Yes, I might have to forego my connection to Torah temporarily, but take me deeper than the Torah so we can reveal the essence of what a Yid is, the essence of my connection to every Yid, and that's where we'll find atonement. Vim ay. Says Hashem, okay? The Ata And you, going back to the pasuk, you means your essence, how you're higher than a name, how you're higher than Torah, tetzave espenei Yisrael, is going to, we said before, what does the tav mean to connect? It's you who's going to connect all the Yidden together. What does that mean? When the connection to Hashem is only through Torah, then there's going to be differences between one Yidden and the next. Which on one level is true. The Yidden that keep Torah, the Yidden that don't keep Torah. The Yidden that serve of Hashem, the Yidden that serve Chasra Vedazar, which we have a principle in Torah called Kores and cutting off your connection to Hashem on a particular level and so on and so forth. Right? That's true. But when you go to the Va'ato of Moshe Rabbeinu, you go to the essence of Moshe Rabbeinu, it's Tetzaves B'nei Yisrael. Then you connect all Yidden to the B'nei Yisrael. You connect all Yidden. Right? Because every Yid is connected to Hashem. So it's through the process of Moshe Rabbeinu taking himself beyond the Torah, deeper than the Torah, so to speak, at least in this parasha, which is the Va'ato, it's the essence of Moshe Rabbeinu that was able to give atonement, and it's able then to connect all the Yidden together. Now, how does that connect to the rest of the parasha? Right? So it says like this. First of all, we have the kindling of the menorah, right? What was the kindling of the menorah? So it says the kindling of the menorah, we ask the question, why Moshe Rabbeinu? V'yikhu eilecha Hashem and Zayisah, they've got to bring to you the oil. So Moshe Rabbeinu had to get the oil and he would give it to Aaron. Why? So it says, when Aaron used to kindle the menorah, he was really kindling and elevating the souls of the Jewish people. Right, that was the midst of kindling the menorah. But a candle, we also know, the candle is a representative of two things, the soul, but also we know the pasuk says, Neir mitzvah v'toyrah or. That the candle represents the mitzvah, the Torah, Torah is called light, candles, mitzvahs are called light, and so on and so forth. Aaron was a tremendous tzaddik. Aaron was beloved by all Jews, etc., etc. But when he lit the menorah, if he would only go on his own merit, he'd be able to elevate the neshamas, but the neshamas who already have a connection to the candle of Torah and the candle of mitzvah. If you want to elevate every yid, says Hashem, it has to be v'ato. We have to go to you and your deep connection. How you connect to every yid, even as higher than Torah or deeper than Torah. Then v'yichu eilecha Hashem and zayzoch, when you can bring to you the oil, then when Aaron kindles the candles, he can include all the neshamas, even those who are temporarily distant from Torah mitzvahs, because the Moshe Rabbeinu connection is then revealed in them, that connection which is even deeper than Torah. Then we have the inauguration of the Mishkan, same thing. We have the inauguration of the Mishkan, also we find an interesting concept. That the inauguration of the Mishkan, although Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't going to be the one serving the Beis HaMikdash, Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't the Kohen. But if you look at this week's parasha, every step of the way it had to be Moshe Rabbeinu with a great emphasis, teaching them what to do. The same idea, it's Moshe Rabbeinu who was going to bring them into the idea that they have to be able to include in the Mishkan every single year. It was the power of Moshe Rabbeinu. And finally, you have in the end of the parasha, what do you have? I missed out one thing. Yeah, I missed out the garments, right? No, same thing. So in other words, the garments and the Mishkan are one point. The garments of the Mishkan are all about atoning for the Jewish people, elevating the Jewish people, and they had to come dafka through Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Then at the end of the parasha, you have a beautiful thing. You have the Ketores, the Mizbeach of the Ketores, right? What's the Mizbeach of Ketores? Mizbeach of Ketores is an interesting thing. On the one hand, it was the altar upon which incense was brought, right? On the one hand, that was the one that was holier than the other altar. The other altar was outside, had all the regular korbanos, the sacrifice, and so on and so forth. This one was inside the Beis HaMikdash, right? Inside the Mishkan. It had incense. Also, incense has a relationship to Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is when the whole day was about incense, dafka brought in the Kodesh HaKadoshim and the Holy of Holies, right? So in a way, the word Ketores represents the deepest connection between the Jew and Hashem. Because that's also the difference between korban and ketores. It doesn't mention it here, but it's other places explained. Korban means to come close, kiruv, right? Ketores means to intertwine. It's like a knot. The word in Aramaic for knot is katar. It's a complete knot. Ketores represents the ultimate bond between the Jew and Hashem. Now it was brought inside, It was born in the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur. It was born very, very, it was like one of the holiest things. And yet we find a very fascinating thing. Dafka the Keteris, there were 11 spices that needed to go into the concoction of the Keteris. One of them was the Chelbono, which is a very foul-smelling spice. And if you miss out any one of the spices, it was a terrible thing. You haven't done the mitzvah. That power, Mizbeach, every other part of the Mishkan had a certain level of holiness. But you have to be very pure to be part of that process, right? You have to be only kosher animals, only Kayanim who aren't pure, etc., who are pure, can serve the Beis HaMikdash. Moshe Rabbeinu is the one that has to administer the Keteris Mizbeach, because that was the one who revealed the deepest connection between a Jew and Hashem, and that's why it included that spice that didn't smell good, because it was, and had to be there, because that was all the Yidden together. No matter what their level of smell is, in other words, no matter what their connection to Torah Mitzvahs is, had to come for the ride, had to become part of that whole process. And that was Dafka, that's only Moshe Rabbeinu can reveal that, because Moshe Rabbeinu is the one that not only leads the Jewish people, but leads in such a deep way that it's connected to every Yid, revealing that connection that every Yid has with Hashem, making every Yid equal. Of course, then it's got to be brought back and nurtured through Torah and Mitzvahs and so on, but it starts at that point, and that's why Moshe Rabbeinu was able to say that if you can't atone them through Torah, I'm going to go deeper. And attack is, Moshe Rabbeinu is mentioned more in this parasha, not less, but it's Va'atos, not his name, it's his depth, which is the source of atonement. Okay? There you are. Have a good day, everyone.